How can a hospitality venue contribute towards a better society, and why is it important that it does?
You're listening to Brave New Girls podcast, where we help you with the health of your body, mind, life, and the world around you. I'm Lou Hamilton, artist, author, and podcast producer, and my mission is to give you simple steps to heal yourself, help others, and create a healthier planet. If you'd like to know how a fun, unique wedding and events venue can also be sustainable and put well-being back into the heart of events, then listen to this episode with Celia Gaze, founder of The Wellbeing Farm, one of the first B Corp certified venues in the UK, and one that's powered by a wind turbine, committed to its local community, and a partner to a charity empowering women in Kenya. Welcome, Celia, to Brave New Girls podcast. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Brilliant. So tell us all about the Wellbeing Farm and what you're trying to do with it, and the fact that you have managed to get B Corp certification, which is really a tough, they really put you through the ringer. And I think if I'm right in saying that you're one of the first hospitality venues in the UK to get B Corp certification.
Yes, I achieved the B Corp certification back in March 2022. The Wellbeing Farm has been around for 10 years, and we just celebrated our 11th anniversary in March this year. And it's a fun, unique and sustainable wedding and events venue. We were the first independent B Corp certified venue in the country, but actually the first wedding venue to be certified in the world. So very proud of that. And we really seek, and it's called the Wellbeing Farm because the farm was based on the five ways to wellbeing: being nice views, doing things that matter, being at the heart of nature, being with animals, and having a really, it's not well-being as in come and lose weight and all that. It's a venue that offers unique experiences. We create memories, and we also keep the stress of event planners down by really focusing and helping them with planning weddings, events and parties and things like that. We're powered by a wind turbine, so very sustainable. And we play also a big role with, through the B Corp certification, we play a big role in the community. We do lots of focusing on, say, for example, unusual events. We help out with helping small business owners, small independent owners with their products. We actively source suppliers, which are predominantly female owned in terms of the work that we do and the suppliers that we support. We also run a wedding fair dedicated to same-sex weddings, and we also partner with a charity looking at empowering women in Kenya.
So what were the hoops that you had to jump through with the B Corp?
Oh gosh, with the B Corp, during lockdown, you can imagine as a wedding venue, I was very restricted into what I can do. And in a venue that normally holds sort of 250 people, at the time we were only limited to 15 people. And so if you remember the Eat Out to Help Out scheme that was running for hospitality, I was there Googling going, what on earth could I do with my venue as part of this Eat Out to Help Out? You know, should I open up as a restaurant? Should I do something outdoor dining? And I was Googling away and came across the B Corp concept. And for someone who had spent 7 years doing sustainability and not heard about the B Corp, I was so almost quite upset about it. I was like, why on earth did I not know about this? And then I became absolutely obsessed. And it was the movement that I'd been looking for. I'd left the NHS to set up a business and was very disillusioned with this just pure focus on profit. And is that all you did as a business? And when I came across the B Corp movement and that emphasis on well-being for your staff, having a role in the community, helping save the planet in terms of sustainability, it was absolutely everything that I wanted to do as a business. And so I spent all of COVID, that being my project. I was determined to come out of COVID with something really positive, and achieving B Corp was the outcome that I came out of COVID. So yes, it was an incredible lot of work, masses of time, masses of data collection, masses of pulling everything together in evidence. But to be quite honest, it was almost also the savior of me to come out of COVID with some sort of sanity and an amazing achievement to get that B Corp certification.
I imagine one of the things that must have been quite challenging is the waste that can happen at events. So what do you do about that?
One of the really important things when it comes to waste of events is looking at actually what you're throwing out in the first place. And one of the first things that I ever did with looking at sustainability was to replace all the black bags with clear plastic bags. And that for me had been a game changer, because until you see what the staff are actually throwing away, you can't look to do anything about it. You don't know if within what they're throwing away vegetable peelings combined with cardboard, with tins, with glass, with some scrunch up tinfoil, with some of that blue roll that you see in all the catering establishments. So me getting and almost banning black bags and replacing them with clear allowed me to basically see what was being thrown away. And then that led to the conversations with the staff. And through the staff, we then led to monitoring the waste. And then through that, we started implementing ways of reducing waste and basically getting rid of waste. So we have bins. We have about five different types of bins. We have cardboard bins. We have recycling bins. We have compost bins. We have glass bins. And we have food waste bins. So all the food waste is collected and turned into biofuel. So we really, anything that's there, we try and we put it all in. Somebody collects it every week. And so at least the food is not just thrown away, it's reused for a purpose. And similarly, then we segregate everything else, and the glass is, for example, all recycled to go make playground foundations for playgrounds and things like that. But to be honest, through that, it's enabled a real culture of putting sustainability at the heart of everything we do. It's not just a tick box and mission. Literally, every single thing we do is through a sustainability filter. It's not just purchasing, through to staff involvement, through to culture, through to suppliers, through to marketing, through to sales. Every single thing is through the window of sustainability. And that is therefore a real heart of the culture of the wellbeing, the culture of the wellbeing.
And how do you encourage your clients who come and use the space and rent it for you for various events? How do you encourage them to be compliant and come on board with this whole culture?
Yeah, in terms of the guests and the parties, we have three different schemes. We have a corporate events green scheme, a green wedding scheme, and a green party scheme. A lot of them are similar elements within each. So, for example, we encourage people to we've partnered with a local coach company, and people use the coach rather than individual cars. They get either discounts or freebies for their events. So, for example, if a corporate company came and hired a coach instead of all the cars, we would give them free breakout facilities and things like that for their events. We don't encourage things like single-use flip-flops or a glitter or things like that for weddings. We encourage the couples to have alternatives to favours, which just may be made of single-use plastic, alternatives such as donations to charity, such as individual measures of, say, homemade gin or something like that, they can, jars of jam, things that they can use. Some of our companies and some of the couples have actually, instead of bringing gifts, people brought bags of food for the local food bank and things like that to the wedding. And so it was amazing because all the guests turned up with sort of bags of food. There was quite a collection that the couple were able to give to the local food bank. We also do things like we don't have things like when corporates come, we don't have pads and pens and things like this. We encourage Buddha bowls for all the food. So we have healthy food. The food is created from food that fuels the brain. So we've done a lot of looking at nutrition and what helps energy and what helps creativity. And we put these into these Buddha bowls. So instead of just providing sandwiches, and so the usual crisps and that sort of buffet, we provide these lovely energizing Buddha bowls, which go down so well with the corporates. And similarly with the food, instead of having plated food where for a wedding, they tend to have just a normal food, we have big platters running down the table where people help themselves. And because people haven't really touched the food, it's like a Sunday lunch when you go and get your own Sunday lunch and say you're all round a table and you help yourself some vegetables, but you don't touch the veg, you only touch with the food. So afterwards, that food comes back And the staff are encouraged to take it home, give it to their families. They all bring Tupperware boxes into work and things like that. So it's a really nice sort of culture. And there's so many things that we encourage all the for parties, corporates and weddings to do in when it comes to being sustainable.
I love that. That just sounds so amazing. And when we think about trying to help the planet and be responsible ourselves, it seems like such a mountain to climb. But you've really shown how by starting gradually building up, it is possible and it has a sort of ripple effect. It's just fantastic. We're going to go back now to the little girl that you were and see whether there were some clues there to the woman and the businesswoman that you've become.
I think one of the things is I've always had this sort of endless supply of energy and enthusiasm with everything I do. And I suppose from a very early age, my parents had a garage and we lived in a cul-de-sac in one time. And I used to always run shows for the people who lived on the cul-de-sac. I literally had, you know, those blackboards that you had as a child for an A board, but it was an old blackboard. I used to put puppet shows starting at 3 o'clock today, and I'd be getting all the people, all the other children from the street to be in the puppet show. And we'd literally be having tickets on the door and all the parents would come and watch our puppet show. And it used to happen every weekend. And then remember when I went to my parents moved and we went in, it was the time of Live Aid. And I remember the man coming back from the street from a house and saying to my mum, "Oh, you've got a cracking sale going on at your house." And my mum said, "What on earth are you talking about?" And I'd gone and got all my dad's clothes from his wardrobe and literally hung them on the hedge and got and sold all his shirts and suits. I can't believe I did that. And to raise money for Live Aid. And I remember saying to my parents, "It's for Live Aid, it's for charity. We've all got to do our part." I think that probably gave me an early indication as to what sort of person I was going
literally
to become.
Literally selling the shirts off his back.
I know. He wasn't
so
very
good,
pleased.
But for a good cause. And so then when you left home, what were you thinking as you went out into the world? Did you want to go and pursue that kind of thing where you were working for yourself?
I think in terms of what I wanted to be, I'd always loved cooking as a young child. I was from a family of, I had six brothers and sisters, three brothers, two sisters. And so one of six. And I'd always been the one that I'd cook and help cook for the family. And so it was no surprise where I went to go in to be a chef and I ended up going to catering college at age 16. I wasn't really great at school, I've got to be honest. I really found school very boring. But I loved when I got to catering college and when I started pursuing my passion, I absolutely loved it. So from catering college, I went to actually do a degree in catering and ended up being the very first person to ever be the management trainee of the Garrick Club, which was amazing. It was a club for the actors and I had this a year of meeting all these famous people, which was brilliant. And then I went to my final year and finished that. And then for some reason, I just couldn't get a job. Honestly, it was in one of the recessions in around 86 and there was absolutely no jobs available. It was so hard. And no, it was a bit later than that. It's about 90. And I ended up actually going and volunteering in the local hospital to do voluntary work because my parents had always been in the NHS and I remember my mum getting absolutely exasperated with me. I literally had 2-inch of rejection letters. It was those days where you got physical letters and not the thing. And she couldn't do anything. And so she rang up the hospital and said, "Have you got anything that my daughters could do?" And she said, "She'll clean the ward, she'll do anything." And I remember going. And the woman said, "Actually, we do this sort of training scheme where we can't pay Celia, but she could come and get work experience." So I used to spend my weekends going to car boot sales, going to get clothes on the Saturday, hanging them on a hanger and putting them on a plastic sheet, and then taking them to a car boot sale on the Sunday. And so basically getting money for myself while doing this. And then during the week, I used to go and work at the local hospital. But that local hospital was amazing because I was able to go and experience every part of the NHS. So I would spend a week on the wards. I would spend a week in the offices. I'd be on the ambulances. I'd be working in a GP practice. I'd go into theatres. I'd go in the mortuary. I'd go into radiology. I literally spent a whole year doing every single part of the NHS. And as a result, I was then obviously offered a job and I started off in the NHS. And I absolutely loved the NHS. I'd found my passion. I was loved it. And I spent 14 years in the NHS. And I got from somebody who couldn't be offered a job. I ended up in my final role as an interim assistant chief executive to support the chief executive of a hospital. But in those roles, I was doing all sorts, from director of service reconfiguration, where I was reconfiguring the hospitals around Greater Manchester and Northeast Greater Manchester. I also did, but my final thing was to go and be, I'd had a baby and I was called up to be, and they said, would you like to come and do a project for us? And it was to do a turnaround director to save £42 million. And I think I was quite flattered to be called up and to ask to do something like that. But as you'll know, with turnaround, and a lot of these projects, they're all cultural. The NHS is heavily unionised. And to make big changes like that takes time. And you cannot possibly go in and just save £42 million like that without a lot of challenging conversations and difficulties involving unions and everything. And it was just a step too far. And I got very worked up. I'd always had stressful jobs. I was never worried about stress. I fought a High Court challenge in the High Courts of London against closure of an A&E, and I won. I'd never worried about battles, but this was a step too far.
Before we go on, I'm just going to press pause for a moment to acknowledge all you Brave New Girls guests and listeners for the stellar work that you do in the world. Please do tell a friend who you think would benefit from listening to the show. Now, back to our guest.
And I was driving to work and I literally thought at age 40 that I was having a heart attack. It was unbelievable and I couldn't stop crying. And I would go home and I would cry and I wasn't sleeping. I was taking out my family. I'd had this newborn baby. And it was one of the worst times. And one of the nurses said to me in the hospital, have you been to see your doctor? And I was like, oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about that. She said, I really feel that you need to go and see a doctor. So I went to the GP expecting him to. And he offered me some tablets. And I said, no, I don't want the tablets. I just want to know what on earth is going on, because I've never experienced anything like this before. And he said, you're having a breakdown, a burnout, and you're going to have to take some time off. And I said, well, what, a couple of days? And he said, no, you have to have a minimum of 2 weeks off. And I was one of these who said, 2 weeks? You must be joking. I can't take 2 weeks off. And he said to me, if you don't take this time off, you're going to be very ill. And it was a little bit of, when somebody says that to you, you think, oh, crikey, I'd better take the time. I stopped and I took the time off. But when you stop and you're on this adrenaline and everything's going, you actually feel awful. You literally, and you are then, and you are more like, what are people going to think of me? I've walked out on a board meeting. I've cried in front of everybody. I was supposed to be the person who came to help the situation, and it's got me all so worked up about it. And you just feel massively embarrassed about the whole thing. And so I actually ended up leaving. Had loads of counselling and loads of support, and which I funded myself, because the waiting lists were too long. And I just said, I'm not going to put myself through this. I'm just going to enjoy my baby and look to do something else. And that was a real sort of why I went from being that into the NHS and then to do something else.
And so that's quite a leap to go from that to setting up a wellbeing farm. So how did that come about? And I know that there's llamas in this story.
Yeah. So I became obsessed with stress through this period of being off. So I couldn't just be off and recover like anyone else. I had to really get to grips with what on earth was this condition that took me from a high flyer and somebody who was confident on a board of directors in the NHS and what have you, down to literally somebody who was just like a just couldn't hardly function. It was awful. And I became obsessed with trying to find out what on earth had happened, and more importantly, how I stopped it happening again. I enrolled on a stress management program, And then that developed into a work-related stress management program, stress at work. And through this course, you had to create a piece of coursework. And the coursework was how to create an environment which minimizes stress. So it was all the usual things. But I then got into the decor. What would the ambience of the place like? What would the decor be? What would the surroundings be like? What would you furnish it with? What would the smell be like, and everything, the colours, everything. And I became absolutely obsessed with creating this sort of fictitious place. Now, this place, it was a piece of coursework. And I submitted it to the man, and he was like, I've never seen anything like it. You've submitted it. It was like the thesis. It was a piece of coursework. And I said, oh, I've loved doing this. I said, I feel like I could create this place. I feel that this is what I could do. And my partner had this rundown farm, which wasn't doing anything. And I went on a gift wrapping course of all places. It was that time when I was wanting to do something different. I was on a gift wrapping course, and I overheard these women talking about how they were running courses from their house, and how they were like, what food they were going to serve, and what were the courses. And I was like, oh my goodness, I love doing courses. I would love to do something like this. I wonder if I could do something. On the way home of driving back, I rang up my partner, Stephen, and said, Stephen, I've got this amazing idea for your farm. Do you think I could do something with your farm? Do you think I could create it into something? And he laid back and he just went, yeah, whatever, I'll just create it. So obviously, I'd never done anything like this in my life. I'd never been entrepreneurial. I'd never really done anything. I've been in the NHS all my life. And so I go through this whole process of turning what was this piece of coursework into a real life business. I start looking for funding. I created a business plan. I do all these things. And the next thing, I was rejected by all these banks, and I was rejected for planning permission. And it went on and on, rejection after rejection. I had so many rejections and so many problems that I literally turned the whole story into a book, because I thought nobody can go through any of this. And I wouldn't want people to go through this. And I thought, if somebody had written all these problems that I could face, and all these trials and I had no idea that all these things happened when you were setting up a business. And I thought, I'm going to document, I'm going to write them all up so people can learn from my story, because there is not one scenario that I haven't faced through this whole story. But eventually it worked. I got the funding. I got the planning permission. I went from somebody who had never, I'd just decorated a house. I didn't even decorate. I mean, I literally just bought a house. And I went from that to literally knocking down a building, to installing a wind turbine, to installing a water treatment plant, to liaising with architects, builders, electricians, you name it, to literally turn a rundown farm into a fully fledged corporate events venue. And that opened in 2012. And obviously it's now multi-award winning and 11 years old, but I can't tell you every scenario I've been through, particularly with staff, near bankruptcy, lack of fun, every single thing I've been through. So much. But the main thing is, what was the best thing I ever did was in a lot of, as well as B Corp, of course, was in 2015, I was nearly bankrupt. I literally had no money and I had to go and pay my VAT bill. And I rang up the VAT office with a credit card, and they said to me, I was all cocky and confident, thinking, I'll just pay my VAT bill on my credit card. And the credit card company still thought I was an NHS director. So I'd not told them. And I rang up and she said, we no longer accept credit cards. And I said, how on earth am I going to pay my VAT bill? And the woman said, if you can't pay your VAT bill, you're not running your business properly. And I never will forget those words. And I had to go home, and I was stressed from the turnaround. Was nothing to stress running a business at this point and nearly facing bankruptcy with your partner's farm on the line. It was horrendous. And I had to write a letter to my partner, Stephen, and my mum to tell them how bad the situation was. And I said, I have a plan, but I'm going to need some money to get out of it, because I have to pay this VAT bill. And thank goodness, because I had borrowed everything off them. I was very ashamed, but I had to borrow from my nearly 80-year-old mother. But I said to her, I'd pay her the money back. And she lent me the money, and I was able to pay the VAT bill. And I said, things are going to change. And I went home at Christmas and she was clearing out my dad's wardrobes and he'd been a concert pianist. And he had this bag of bow ties. And she said, of all the things, what on earth am I going to do to these? And I just made this comment, which said, oh, just give them to me. And when I get back, I'll stick them on a llama. That was the amount of thought that I had. Now, I'd had these llamas because when I got the farm, there was all these stables and I didn't know what to do with the stables. And I did all this research into stress. And one of the animals that kept coming up around stress was a llama. And I needed an animal which didn't take a lot of work, which could survive in the winters and was just easy. It was just easy to look after and they had a link with stress. So having never met a llama or anything in my life, I go off down to Northampton to see these llamas and I ended up falling in love with these animals and so got the animals. And so I'm there with these animals with a business that's nearly failing and I'm going, what am I going to do? So I have this idea of sticking a bow tie on a llama. And so I went back after Christmas and I said to the person who helped me look after them, just see if you can put this bow tie on a llama. I know it may sound ridiculously crazy, but just see if it'll happen. Comes back about 20 minutes later. I've got the bow tie on the llama and I was going, great, I'm going to take a picture. So I put a picture, put it on Facebook, I upload it and it just went crazy. Everybody wanted to know about the bow tie wearing llamas. It was one of these moments that the tiniest little thing can make the most massive difference. And booking started flooding in. Everyone wanted to know about these llamas. And we literally went from, we'd done two weddings and we went to two to 5 to 15 to 43 to 67 and then COVID hit. That tiny little thing of just, it's that little thing that just makes a huge difference. And for me, it was that bow tie on a llama, which became the brand of the Wellbeing Farm. And to be honest, beyond anything else, it's the bow ties. Everybody knows us as the place with the bow tie wearing llamas.
And so from where you are now, what's your vision for the future? Do you have to keep growing? Do you have to keep expanding and pushing? Or are you able to keep it at a certain level? I know with businesses, you can never stand still, can you?
So where we are now is I don't have any ambitions to grow or create another wellbeing farm. I think one farm is enough. But we now have this, we're trying to create this venue, and we've created this venue, which is just so special and gives people this absolutely awesome experience and a unique experience, which is what I really want to create. And we've developed this sort of vision for hospitality where, you know, everything that comes in. So the whole of the farm was created through upcycling and recycling. For example, when I was creating the farm, I didn't want to buy anything new. I wanted to see what I could make and create from products that were old. So, for example, the roofs of the ceilings of the barn we have for the wedding are made from parachutes that would have been used for the military. And so these are incredible 30 meters wide white parachutes, which cover the whole ceilings. And the bar was sourced from a nightclub and a gin bar was created from a wardrobe and the milk churns were used for bar stools and all this. So every time someone comes to the venue, they love the look and the quirkiness and the uniqueness of the whole place. And so I want to then build on that whole sustainability. Having discovered this sustainability and this real feeling that for me, hospitality at the moment is in real problems. People having problems recruiting. We've had the cost of living crisis. We're about to face another big hike in wages for staff. And we're not experiencing some of the problems that other maybe places are facing because we've always monitored our electricity. So when we were prepared almost for the cost of, nobody was really prepared, but we were better place because we'd frozen our electricity rates, things like that. We'd sorted out big contract suppliers. Similarly, because of the work we'd done with suppliers and things like this, we'd absolutely nailed good prices. We'd done lots of work on the sustainability side. And I now want to help people become B Corps because I'm such a huge advocate of the movement. I just think it's the best thing I've ever done. And if, for example, you can create businesses that really look after the staff, placing well-being at the centre, really help the environment and really contribute to society and to their local community. Can you imagine if every business behaved like that? How better society would be? And this is a real mission for me. I've created the B Corp Fest, which is like a business festival to get more and more companies to become B Corps. And for this, for a small farm, to be attracting speakers from Patagonia, Tony's Chocolony, Faith in Nature this June, for me is absolutely amazing. And I'm now very passionate about helping other businesses become more sustainable. I've done some work with UK Hospitality on explaining how to turn the wellbeing farm around and how we've been able to do that. And for me, it's now, I would love to almost create something that just helps other businesses. So the farm is just running. We've got bookings. I think booking 26 now are coming in now, and 25, 26. And it's almost to help create a better hospitality experience is what I really want to do. And to encourage other places, because hospitality is like a massive industry. It's a massive supplier. But a lot of places, they do not look after the staff. It's very challenging working conditions. It's long hours. It's low pay. And it's almost that if you can achieve something like this with hospitality, you could really do it anywhere. And even sending messages out, like a lot of people go, well, to be sustainable, you have to invest in solar panels or you have to put the EV chargers in the car park and things like that. And actually, no, I started my journey with switching bin bags from black plastic to clear plastic. That's about 10p. That is not an expensive investment. Everybody could afford to do that because that's, you change your culture. And a lot of the sustainability and these improvements to businesses are not about putting solar panels and EV chargers. They're actually about changing your culture and changing your day-to-day practices and recycling more and being more thoughtful purchasing and looking at your waste reduction. And those are the things that really people need to learn from. And I'm very much around, we've started such an excited collaboration with a charity in Kenya where when people come to the farm and they book a wedding or a party, we make a donation and to the charity. And I'm actually going out in November to Kenya with some members of staff to actually go to the graduation ceremony for the 89 women that the charity has funded to get out of this lifetime of female genital mutilation and basically being thinking that their only role in life was to have more children. And these women are being educated to be teachers and farmers and builders and business people. And for me, that's just such an exciting thing to be involved with, because I think it's all about finding your real purpose when you have a business and just doing so. You could do so much more with a business than just to make money for yourself. And this is where I suppose my values in the NHS have colluded and been developed through business. And I feel like it's such an exciting future to be involved in that. There we are.
And for people wanting to make changes and starting small, building up from where they are, it does take courage. So how do you define courage from everything that you've learned yourself?
I honestly feel that you've got to not be afraid of failure, because every time I failed, my business has just got better and better. Now, if I hadn't failed in the NHS, I would have probably still been in the NHS and I probably would never have gone into the realms of entrepreneurship. If I hadn't not got that job right at the beginning and got all those rejection letters, I probably would never have entered into the NHS. I'd have probably just stayed in hospitality. If I hadn't gone into near bankruptcy and faced the VAT woman saying to me, no, you've got to change, then I probably wouldn't have put the bow tie on the llama and done anything different. If COVID hadn't come along, I don't think I would have had the time to do the B Corp certification and to put that effort in. And even if the Ukraine war came along, and with the now massive emphasis on sustainability, maybe I would have always done that because I had obviously installed a turbine. But these things happen in not just to you, but for they're not just with you. They're massive wider society implications. You've really got to make the most of what happens. things are always going to happen and you live in a sort of era of uncertainty and worry. I never, ever watch the news. I just focus on my own thing. I don't really look at what competitors are doing. I literally furrow my own field, you know. I put my life in and every time, but I really would say embrace failure because to be quite honest, every time I failed, my business has just got better and better.
Thank you so much, Celia, for showing us how we can go from midlife crisis, new parenthood or corporate burnout to finding the essential thing that we want to spend our life doing, whether that's for the benefit of ourselves, our loved ones, our local and global community, and for the planet itself. Brilliant work. Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Celia, for showing us what better business looks like and how responsibility for people and the planet starts at home. You can find out more about Celia's work on www.thewellbeingfarm.co.uk and follow her on LinkedIn at Celia Gaze. Thank you so much for listening. I hope today's story inspired you on your own Brave New Girl journey. If you need further support, head over to www.bravenewgirlmedia.com.